Blog Talk Radio.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London. Off to my left, far away in the distance, I can see just that faint, red, angry snap of anti-aircraft bursts against this steel-blue sky. About 5 minutes ago, the guns in the immediate vicinity were working. I was up here earlier this afternoon and looking out over these housetops, looking all the way to the dome of St. Paul's. I saw many flags flying from staffs. No one ordered these people to put out the flags. They simply feel like flying the Union Jack above their roofs. No one told them to do it, and no flag up there was white.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
I'm out of my own, walking the streets. Look at the things that I meet. I feel like I want to go home. What do I feel? But I still believe, I still believe, through the shame and through the grief, through the heartache, through the tears, through the waiting, through the years, for people like us, in places like this, we need all the hope that we can get.
Show broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. The English Defence League radio show, the truth and the voice of the EDL. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, this is a special edition of the EDL radio show. We're remembering 9/11. It's English Defence League radio show, remembering 9/11/2001. I'll just start off a little statement here. Welcome to the English Defence League radio show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell, that's me. And my panellists for this evening are Leslie Ann Stoffel and Dave Agador Milner. Tonight, we will be remembering the 11th of September 2001, a day that started like any other busy day in America. By the end of the day, the world saw a modern marvel destroyed in New York. a nerve center of the U.S. defense crippled in Washington, and a further attack thwarted through the bravery and self-sacrifice of ordinary citizens. When all the pandemonium happened on that fateful day, the heroism by firemen, police, and first responders swung into action. In the UK, we all wondered what was going to happen to the towers and other attacks taking place. It was discovered later that 67 British citizens and 16 foreign nationals with close ties to the UK were among the victims of these Islamic terror attacks. The world never imagined the nightmare that unfolded on 9/11. We pay homage to all the people killed, wounded, and missing to this day, women, men, and children. We remember. And without further ado, I'd like to bring on my panelist and my wingman this evening. That's Leslie Ann Stoffel and Dave Agador Milner. Good evening to you both, and I hope you're both well.
Hey guys, it's good to talk to you. Great to be here.
It's good to have you here as well, Leslie. And Dave, you're here as well, aren't you, my friend?
Yes, I am, and we wish everybody in the UK a good evening, and everybody in North America, of course, good afternoon. And always nice again to talk to you, Jeff, and you, Leslie. So hello to everyone.
Yeah. Hi, Dave. I noticed just that actually earlier on I was just flicking through like I normally do before we had a little conference like we normally do just before preambling. Before the show, and I did notice, Dave, that it looks like you've got a hurricane heading towards, I'm not sure, Wilmington, around that area. It's heading in that direction by the way that the satellite is heading it. I don't know how strong it is, but I thought I'd give a mention before we continued with the memorial show this evening, brother.
Yeah, it is. It's always a concern this time of year. We're swinging into fall. It's nice and cool here, fine, and everything. But we always have to watch out for these. And yes, they've been tracking that one for some time. We'll eye on it. Yeah, because they're always concerning. Yeah. So.
Yeah, batten down the hatches to those people that's living close by anyway. That's what our message would be to everybody. And just keep safe, keep indoors. Don't go wandering around with things blowing here, there and everywhere. It's the most dangerous thing you can do, isn't it, Dave? A little warning to our listeners out there, eh, mate?
It is, one of the things that a lot of people who don't live in hurricane-prone areas and don't have the kind of critters they do down south. One of the extra added little horrible benefits is when you get in that flood state and the flooding starts to happen, you'll get poisonous snakes floating in the water.
Oh.
Not the ones that are normally there, but you'll get other ones. And you'll get colonies of that float on top of the floodwaters.
Because they can swim, can't they, Dave? I'm right in my thinking. They swim, don't they? Snakes?
Some of the snakes do, yes, Jeff, and some of them don't. Sometimes you'll find them, they'll do what a lot of creatures will do. They'll just get up on top of little clumps of earth, and the floodwaters are such that right along.
You always wonder about them situations, don't you, Leslie Ann and Dave? It's when you start talking about it, it's the realism that comes home, that that it's just not humans that this affects. That it happens to the animal kingdom, doesn't it? Everything associated with the animal kingdom is affected by these things, isn't it, Dave? Amazing.
It is. And go ahead, Leslie.
Oh no, I was just agreeing. I was just saying yes, that's true. Yeah.
As I say, it's it often, you know, we often think about the human what happens to humans, but we don't always take in hand that the animals, don't forget horses, things like that, just domestic animals, chickens, things like that. I mean, they're affected. But anyway, before we get, we'll have to do a radio show with Hurricane Watch or something like that, Dave. Our own special, Dave, eh?
Well, you know, Jeff, I'd like to start this out, guys, if I can, because I know we do have a wide audience in the UK, and you may be asking yourself, well, what's, you know, why, aside from just the general respect, is EDL Radio doing a tribute to those lost in 9/11? And I think one of the things, I've discussed this with Jeff, one of the things that brings us together, the United States and Canada as well, and the UK, is now our shared experiences with terror. You guys in the UK, long before 9/11, were suffering terror attacks from, the IRA and people like that. And for us, terrorism was always something that was over there. It was always not exclusively to the UK, but over in some other country. And 9/11 was when it was starkly brought home to us. I mean, there had been warnings from people before that we were living on borrowed time. We're just poo-pooing that happened here. Then 9/11 did happen, and some minds got changed. But we do share we do share through these tragedies. And we're going to have a few audios and things, and that is why, for instance, guys in the UK, 7/7 affected me so much. Seeing those buses and crumpled over like bananas, as Jeff says, and looking at that living hell down in the subways there in London, and things like that, it just reminded me of honestly the bottom floors. And the atrium area of one of the towers, in New York on 9/11, kind of what it looked like, this Dante's Inferno kind of thing. We share all three of our countries, and it brings us closer together, and it should bring us to a certain amount of resolve. And guys, I'll start out. And then pass it to Leslie and then Jeff, for those who haven't heard before. On 9/11, it was kind of odd. Early September in the United States, it was a pristine blue sky in New York. You can see that from the pictures. And it was the same way down in Texas. And of course, it was a Texas September, which means it was getting kind of hot, but there wasn't a cloud in the sky, nothing. And my brother had taken me to the eye doctor because a detachment back on with a laser beam, and this was a post-operative visit. And this is how these things affect you. People, I was talking to my brother, just waiting to see the doctor. And at this point, I have no idea what I was talking to him about. None. I have no idea what the subject was or anything. And then he said, "Hang on, I got to hear this. And he went up to the receptionist desk because they had the radio on, as a lot of people do in the States early in the morning. You know, everybody listens to the morning zoo or whatever, you know, as kind of color, so people aren't bored to tears when they visit the doctor's office. And this wasn't the morning zoo. We began hearing the reports of the plane hitting the first tower, and of course we went on in and saw the doctor, and there was so much noise going on outside, in his outer office and everything as he was trying to examine, that he actually got up off of his examination stool and walked over to the door and opened it up and yelled at everybody to be quiet, please, so he could actually do what his job. And by the time he left, we knew that it was an attack. And I was worried because I had a friend at the time who worked at Sun Microsystems in one of the towers, and I didn't know whether she was at work or not, or, you know, how she was, anything of that nature. So the trip home was just agony because we didn't have internet access at the time in a mobile way like we do now. This was 2001. We had internet access at home, but it was dial-up internet access, you know. But you had to get to a land-based computer. This wasn't something you could just do on a cell phone. Back then, cell phones were pretty primitive. So it took hours just to find out that this thing was okay. And she told us basically what happened was she missed her early train to work, and she lived, if you want to look that up on a map. Long Island is kind of east of New York City, and you take the Long Island Railroad into the city. And she took a later train and completely oblivious to what was going on. And she got to the platform she normally gets on in Manhattan just in time to see the second tower go down. And she said she saw things like a guy running away from the area with his hair on fire, sticking his head in a fountain to put it out, and things like that. The whole thing has affected her greatly ever since then. And, I was just relieved to hear that she was all right. And, that scene was played out, for the thousands of country because the World Trade Complex, guys, it was a building, a seven building concept. It was, complex. It wasn't just two towers. It was seven buildings altogether. It was a small city. In fact, the History Channel had filmed in August of that year one of their Modern Marvels programs about the World Trade Center, which was very ironic indeed. You can find it on, I think you can still find it on YouTube, because now the way they have it, the way they put it together after 9/11, they showed that some of the people that they interviewed are still missing, not dead, not found or identified. They're just missing. They're not there. So those immediate recollections of 9/11 and Jeff, if you don't mind, I'm going to pass it on over to Leslie. And Leslie, what are your memories of that day?
Well, that day here on the West Coast, it was only 6-something in the morning, and I had my radio. I always have my radio on in the morning, like you were saying. I think it might have come on with the alarm or something, but anyway, I heard it on the news, and right away I knew it was a terror attack. And at that time, I was doing driving for a company where we were picking up tourists from different hotels around Vancouver and transporting them to their motorhomes so they could go drive around around, you know, British Columbia and Canada and stuff like that. Most of them were from Germany, from Europe, but some were from the U.S. And so anyway, that day I still had to go and do my job. So I got up, got going, went to where we meet, and we had to go start picking people up. I believe, I cannot remember if we did go to the airport that day or not, because what happened was is they closed all the airports. They closed the ones here also. And so anyway, I was having to still, you know, still driving the people around to get their vehicles and pick them up from where they were and take them to the to their hotels before they were going to fly out. But then, of course, they were stuck here because the airports were closed. So I was offered, people offered me money, people from the U.S. offered me money to drive them down back home to Texas or wherever they were from, and because they didn't want to be stuck here for God knows how long. But also, you know, at the same time, we were all just sort of, we were all in just this stupor of what the hell just happened, what's going to happen next. You know, we were all thinking, are there going to be terror attacks in other places? And so, yeah, so we were all on edge, but we still sort of had to keep going within the framework of what, you know, what we were working with. And we all knew at the time that we'd never be the same. Unfortunately, our leaders have, you know, a lot of people have pressed the snooze button, and then our leaders have used it, you know, sort of turned it against us and gone into this pathological altruism to not screen these people and bring them in. Anyway, that's a whole other story. But yeah, so that was kind of my day on the day that it happened.
Before I mention what happened to me that day, Liz, if I remember rightly, there was one airport open that was doing a lot of traffic, was helping out because there was planes up in the air and they were really having difficulties landing or where to go. And there was an airport. I'm not sure exactly what airport it was called.
Yeah, it was over on the East Coast.
I am.
Canada.
Oh, I was going to say, because they done a fantastic job, didn't they? Because still talk about it today. What a brilliant way that they handled the situation, which was pretty fluent, wasn't it? Because as you said, Leslie, none of us knew if this is an ongoing attack, whether it is going to be a simulated attack across the globe. You know, we don't know who's going to get one in the UK or one in Canada or one in wherever. It could have been, you know, that's the way it felt, didn't it? But I just wanted to mention that because I do remember that at the time, and I heard something about the orders actually come through. If a plane's not answering, then there were some questions about I was shooting it down, but thank goodness that never occurred, because it could have done, couldn't it? Let's be honest. But Leslie and Dave, I mean, my day started off, I think I just got in from work, and I was home from early from work or something or other. I had a couple of hours dinner break or something like that. And the next thing I know is the TV was on like it normally is, and the picture changed. I think we was watching something like Neighbours or Home and Away, something we watch over in the UK, and it switched channel. It switched to the BBC, and then it showed you a plane embedded in high up on one of the Twin Towers. And of course, the conversation was, well, how the hell are the firemen going to get to those people and get above those people to the people on the other floors? Because I think that was what was going through all of our minds, is what are those people going to do up, you know, above? There's smoke rising, and how much is going on there? But as we was, you know, as it was quite talking about it, and it could have been an accident, you know, how these things normally could have happened, but people were saying, well, no, because there's not a, there's a no-fly zone in that part of the city. And as they were discussing it, well, to the right of me, I think it was the left or the right, exactly, I can't remember how it was situated, but it came in from the side of the screen and hit the other building, and it was just surreal. It was surreal. You thought, my goodness me, you realised that. That's when it realised, myself personally, that, the free world was under attack. I really, it come home to us all. And it was just horrific. It was like watching one of these nightmare scenarios, TV things going on, you know what I mean? But this was real. Real people was dying. People had used themselves to hijack planes with people on board, women, children, and men, and to fly them into buildings. That's the most horrific thing that we lived, that lives with us, doesn't it? It'll always live with me. It's never out in the back of my mind. You can just see it, can't you? Close your eyes and you can see the building, you can see the smoke rising, and you're thinking, oh my God, those poor people. But we didn't hear at the time, but there was other stations reporting it, but actual people were so desperate, jumping out of windows, holding hands and jumping out the windows. That was dramatic, but, you know, what would you do if you was put in the same situation? I think Leslie Ann and Dave, I think, who would not do that? Who wouldn't do it? I think we all would, you know, if it come to it. But that's how my day, and it was just tears. I mean, I cried, man, I really cried. I was thinking those poor people. You know, the poor people. It just shook me. It shook me to the bone. I don't know how it did it to you, Dave, and to the, you know, the people around. You know, the fear, that you know, people running in fear, screaming in fear. It was the most horrific thing. And we must never. Some people think that they can just, it's in the past. No. There's still people who are still mourning their loved ones to today, even. And they'll never forget that day. Will they, Dave? Will they, Leslie Ann, you know? But anyway, mm-hmm. That was my day as I saw it. I mean, my wife, she was distressed. I think was all distressed. It was just, you couldn't believe it. Not in the heart of New York with the heart, but the beating heart. But there you go. It did. It happened. The same as we had the attack 7/7. But Dave, I'd like to pass it back to you, bro.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Now, guys, I've got a few audios here. We're going to record, and then we'll talk about one of these things. The first one is. This is about a little over about four minutes and 45 seconds long. So, you know, this is just kind of the start of it. This is what most people think of when they think of 9/11. So let's begin with this one.
September 11th, 2001. A day of grief. A day of courage. This is how that day unfolded.
My daughter called me. She said, a plane just flew into the World Trade Center. I said, nah, you gotta be kidding. It's gotta be a Piper Cub or some clown was flying down the river.
At 8:46 a.m., American Airlines Flight 11 from Boston, with 92 aboard, traveling at a speed of 470 miles per hour, strikes the North Tower of the World Trade Center complex. Within minutes, officials coordinate the citywide emergency response. Their base of operations is a state-of-the-art command center located on the 23rd floor of 7 World Trade Center. With one tower in flames, the tragedy is only beginning. It is 9:03 when United Airlines Flight 175, with 65 aboard, traveling at the speed of 590 miles per hour, smashes into the south tower of the World Trade Center. This aircraft strikes the corner of the south tower. It rips a diagonally shaped gash from the 84th to the 78th floors. The south tower lasts only 56 minutes before it succumbs at 9:59 a.m. A dust cloud billows outward for blocks. Victims stagger away. At 10:28, the television mast atop the North Tower spears straight down.
Once the collapse started, there really wasn't any way to stop it. It was just going to go all the way down once it got started.
Chaos in New York City. Power is down in Lower Manhattan. Phone lines jammed with more than 230 million calls. Hundreds of firefighters trapped in the towers. Hundreds more race to the scene. Falling debris from the collapse of the North and South Towers ignites fires in the neighboring buildings of the World Trade Center. World Trade 4, 5, and 6 are ablaze. World Trade 7, the building housing the city's command center, burns unchecked for 7 hours. At 5:20, it collapses. The city's emergency nerve center is destroyed.
Somewhere in that time, and it's very hard to keep track of time during this, they had been ordered to evacuate number 7 by the Port Authority. To this day, we don't know who gave that order, but whoever it was saved a lot of people's lives.
With New York a war zone, some residents walk across the Brooklyn Bridge to get out of the city. Others seek escape in vessels piloted by the Army Corps of Engineers. At 7:45 p.m., the New York Police Department says 78 officers are missing and estimates that 200 firefighters are dead. At 10:56 p.m., police officials say they believe there are victims alive in the rubble of the World Trade Center.
Working with urban search and rescue teams, there was a lot of areas to be searched underneath the debris field. There were voids that had to be searched for possible live people.
September 11th, 2001, the longest and most tragic day in New York's history, is drawing to a close.
And, excuse me, and there you are, guys. Most people wouldn't think of 9/11 in New York. And what happened there, and it really was significant. It didn't put a stop to the American economy, but it did make it hiccup for some time. Of course, the stock exchange was closed, and there were other effects. For instance, TV was affected because at the time, the World Trade Center, the two towers, were the tallest buildings in the world. And, of course, what do people do when they have tall buildings? They stick antennas up on top of them. And most New York broadcasters had moved their antennas once the building was completed in 1970. They moved the antennas that they had, the ones that could, from the top of the Empire State Building to the World Trade. And suddenly that was gone. and it took some time to it took some time to reactivate those antennas on the Empire State Building. So TV reception was affected for several states in New Jersey, Connecticut, states like that. And of course, we had interruptions even in sports. I mean, that that weekend, of course, the football season was on, and the Players Union informed the NFL that neither the New York Jets nor the New York Giants would be playing because these guys were practicing and they could still see the smoke rising from their various places where they practiced from the site, and they had family in Manhattan, and this had affected them deeply. There were just all sorts of ripple effects, and you said you don't know how we were affected. I think a lot of it, I think, was shock. You know, I think that that was the biggest thing on that day that I encountered personally, was just shock. And it's something that I had been thinking and fearing was going to happen in the United States at some point. But I thought that it was going to be more along the lines of what happens in Israel, which Leslie is familiar with, attacks in markets and things like that. I had no idea that it would happen on that large a scale, and I think very few others did. So there you are.
Great. Yeah, just Dave, before we continue, I'd just like to let you know that our chat room's building up quite good today. We've got Bigfoot has joined us with his Bigfoot's place, blogspot.com. I think I got that right that time there, Big. We've got Getting for USA. We've got Porky Steve. And we've got Collerton. And, of course, we've got Leslie Ann Stoffel in the chat as well. Just to let you know, Dave, that we've got a few people there. Collerton says, Dave, is Dave a Canadian, mate? Sounds like he hails from the New World. That's what Collerton said. No, Dave is... Dave, would you like to tell Collerton where you abide, my friend?
Oh, well, Carlton, I'm a bit of a weirdo. I was born and raised in Texas, and then I moved up to Vermont for a woman, and that's where I still am. And I'm with this program because I could tell that the things that are going on in the UK would be happening here in the United States very soon, and they've already started, of course. So that's, and Jeff was kind enough at the time to invite me in. So you know, I'm grateful to Jeff for that. So that's where I am.
It was great to meet you. In fact, I think it was Al Kell, the Red Fox blogger, that introduced us, didn't it? Or we were somewhere, and I think she introduced us, and it's going back a few years now, isn't it, Dave? But anyway, as I say, we've got quite a few people here this evening, so it's good to see everybody's joined us this evening. And it is a time for reflection. It is time, something we just got to remember, that since 9/11, there's been 29,000 other attacks, apart mm-hmm. from that main, the one that we always count down from, like from 1, 2, 3, but there's over 29,000 plus. Am I right, Dave? Attacks, different attacks, Islamic attacks across
the
globe.
You know, go to the religionofpeace.com, guys, and it's there.
Yeah.
And Leslie, you may have some sources for some of that. But yeah, that one, you usually have the numbers. I think that what we have to remember always is that those aren't just numbers, those are people.
That's right,
lives
right.
Ruined. people. So, but Leslie, let me ask you a question. Was there anybody from the New York area that you encountered on that day?
No, I didn't encounter anyone from the New York area. The people that I do recall speaking with at length were from Texas, and they talked to me about driving them back, but then I guess they must have changed their mind and just stayed until they were allowed to travel back by air. There were, my mom was this isn't a bad place to be trapped, but my mom was trapped over on Kauai in Hawaii at my sister's place. My sister and my brother-in-law. Yeah, my sister and my brother-in-law had gone away, so they even shut down that airport because there's a base about 45 minutes away from that airport. There's an army base. And so they shut down that airport as well. So my mom was sort of trapped over on Kauai for a few days there. And so she was quite kind of nervous about all that too.
Well, well, you almost have to be, especially if you're going to be flying over the Pacific. Joke. At least she was in a good place. I've never myself, but a lot of people seem to like Hawaii.
Yeah. It is beautiful.
There's another aspect to it, to the attacks, and few people talk about this one, but there was the attack on the Pentagon, and this is one of the places where I begin to know a lot of the conspiracy theorists begin talking about this and everything, and there's been a bunch of idiocy surrounding this, but I've got a video for this. Just under 3 minutes long, so I'm going to go ahead. Jeff, if it's all right with you, I'll go ahead and play.
Okay, Dave. Yeah, go ahead, mate.
Well, here you go. This is about 9/11 and the Pentagon.
At the point that the second tower was hit, I don't think any of us had any idea of the breadth or magnitude of what could possibly happen. So when the Pentagon was hit, that kind of expanded our understanding of just how vast the potential was for this to affect everyone in America.
The fact that our Pentagon, our defense headquarters, could be hit by a commercial airliner and do that kind of damage was kind of mind-blowing, because the correlation was quite clear. If the Pentagon wasn't safe, nowhere is safe.
It was important to go downstairs and get outside, which I did. And as we came around the corner, we could see the fire and the smoke. There were pieces of the aircraft spread across the grassy area outside the building.
I reached out to Secretary Rumsfeld from Air Force One, and I was not able to get him. And it turns out one reason why is that he was becoming a first responder at the Pentagon. He was helping rescue people.
That was when it first really hit me, as I saw the billowing cauldron of black smoke coming out of the western wall of the Pentagon. So that's when it became very, very real for me.
Before 9/11, I had never flown over the Pentagon. It just wasn't part of the appropriate air traffic control routing. Once the Pentagon got hit, and we weren't there, we were all very frustrated and angry that we weren't there to protect and defend.
It psychologically, I think, took a toll on the American psyche and made us really recognize that how vulnerable the White House is sitting there in its lawn with its little fence around it, and how the Capitol was just a target in waiting.
It was a rude awakening, not that terrorism existed, we knew that, but that it could be brought right home, right here in the United States.
And it, I think, energized the country to recognize that the task before us was to not win a war, not win a battle, and not think that we can accomplish our goals only with bullets, but to recognize that it's an ideological struggle, as communism was, and that we need to be patient and persistent and tolerant.
I got a call from my daughter, who was working on Bloomberg News, and she said, "Dad, have you heard?" And I didn't know what she was talking about, and she said, "Turn on the TV. A plane has hit one of the Twin Towers."
Right. There we go, guys. And I just want to say, the whole tolerance bit, I'm not so much for when it comes to Islam, but the thing that got me in that little report was Donald Rumsfeld, who was the defense secretary at the time, and I believe it had worked in the administration as well, was, you know, rolled his sleeves and became a first responder there at helping to pull people out at the Pentagon. And Jeff and Leslie, I know you guys can empathize with this. I mean, we do have a we do, as Jeff says, we do have a moan about the the upper crust people, but it does seem like when one of these disasters, one of these terror attacks and things happens, often even they will roll up their sleeves and join in and help where they can. So it's always notable. But
it's a good human quality, Dave. It's something that's always embodied us as human beings. When we come across such a tragedy like that, that everybody, as you say, roll the sleeves up. Doesn't matter what background you come from, how upper off, upper echelons you are, or whatever. But there's people that need help, and it seems everybody comes to that situation. Everybody pulls together. It's a good human quality, and it's very sad that's when the great human qualities, the heroes, come out. This is when we hear the stories of the heroes after running towards disaster, running towards disaster, not shying away, not concerned, just let's get in there, let's get them people out. I mean, that's it. That is the mentality of people that we need to help. And that will live forever, Dave. As far as I'm concerned, when things like this happen, the devastation, things like that, everybody will come together. We've always done, and we will continue to do so, whatever befalls us. I think that's something which is we can all be proud of as being a part of the human race, as we do. At that time, given time, we will look out for one another and be the shoulder for people to lean on. That is what it's all about, isn't it? It's a part of the good qualities, what we talk about all the time, isn't it, Dave? Isn't it, Leslie?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to comment, Jeff, I'm thinking after Leslie does that, we'll take a little break and then come back for the second part of the show. What do you think?
Yeah, that'd be lovely, Dave. Great, that, mate. We'd like to pass it your way, Leslie, for your thoughts of what we've just been talking about. Put you on the spot.
Well, guys, what came to my mind when you were talking about we all come together in a crisis and try to help each other and all that sort of stuff. But what started coming out right away, I clearly distinctly remember this with the mainstream media, I call it the media that brainwashes us it's not even real. They started coming out right away and saying that the U.S. deserved this. You know, they deserve this attack because blah, blah, blah. They're immoral. They did immoral things, whatever. And at first I was thinking, I thought, okay, well, what, you know, is that a plausible argument? Is that a good argument and everything? And then I came to realize, no, that's just the lies and the going against the American people, to blame them, to blame the victim instead of standing up to the true evil of what just happened. And this has been part of the cancer that's happened afterwards, which is, it's all our fault. You know, if we just keep appeasing and appeasing and appeasing and placating this evil, pretty soon we'll be able to make it, you know, go away. And no, the more we placate and try to please, the worse it gets. So that's been a cancer now going throughout, you know, threading its way throughout all of these years, and has helped to, has even infiltrated our leadership in our government to open the borders wide open. And so, yeah, now we're sort of at loggerheads with one another. Those who do want to come together and help and save civilization, and those who don't.
That's perfect.
It's a lot of those that don't, isn't there, Leslie? It's sad to say it, but it's almost like they're welcoming Armageddon, isn't it? It's like they're welcoming Armageddon. Open the doors, let it flood through. It doesn't matter about the bloodshed. Doesn't matter about rape jihad going on, which on a global scale. It doesn't matter as long as we do what we do. And, you know, that. What can you say about these people?
And college
as you
them,
say,
and
Leslie,
hey guys,
they've deteriorated. I would say now they're the worst that they've ever been. They just seem to pick it up again and again. They get, is there such a word as worse? Worse? deteriorated,
worse, decaying. That's one of my favorite words.
Yes, decaying.
But hey guys, read Collerton's comment before we go off to the break. He's written down here, didn't they want to build a mosque where the towers once? And yes, they did, and Pamela Geller fought that. Remember that?
That's right, they did.
Thank you, Collerton, for helping us to recall that. And that was fought long and hard. And well done, Pamela Geller, and everybody associate with that, because that would have been this is like a victory, isn't it? You know, in the eyes of these people, this would be a victory. You know what they've always done? They build a mosque over. Exactly,
yeah,
Dave.
All right, guys, well, let's go ahead and take a break. This is about 4.5 minutes long. I think it's appropriately respectful. And, guys, join us for the last part of the program in about 4.5 minutes. Here we go.
Spend all your time waiting for that second chance, for a break that would make. And it's hard at the end of the day. I need some distraction. Oh, beautiful.
if that tune gets you every time, doesn't it, ladies and gentlemen? It's most beautiful tune, and it makes you think. It helps you look back and makes you remember. And lest we ever forget, we will never forget what happened on that day. It changed all of our lives. Every single person you can think of, it changed their lives. And we knew it. After that, we knew that things would never be the same again. The life before that was gone and over, and now the start of a new day had begun. We didn't know exactly what that entailed, and don't forget, we remember all the funerals. We remember the names. It's something that we never forget, is it, Dave? Is it, Leslie Ann? You know, and our listeners. But Dave, thank you very much for that tune. I wasn't sure exactly what you were going to play, but I think that suited the theme of the show that we're doing in memorial tonight, Dave.
I appreciate it. And now I'd like Jeff and Leslie to shift to this is the last part of the program. To a couple of audios I've got. First one, you Jeff, you wrote most of the script for tonight, and you talked about the heroism of the firefighters and the police and so many other people, and there were various citizens on that day that were also heroes in New York and Washington, and they were also people who were on United Flight 93. These were ordinary citizens who were faced with this terror attack, hearing about it, and they were already in the air, and they were in the weapon that could have been used to hit either the Capitol or the White House. And Jeff, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and play this audio about Flight 93. This is 3 minutes and 46 seconds. So.
No, you go ahead, Dave. I was thinking about that.
We're back in Somerset County, Pennsylvania. The days leading up to the 10th anniversary of 9/11 tended to be rainy in the east, but we wanted to come here to the Flight 93 National Memorial near Shanksville. This will be the visitor's entrance when the memorial opens to the public for the first time on Saturday. Flight 93 was the last of the planes to be hijacked. It left Newark Liberty Airport about 25 minutes late, and that delay allowed the passengers to find out what had happened at the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. The memorial borders the field where the plane came down. The Boeing 757 had been headed to Washington, aimed at the Capitol or perhaps the White House. But the last attack of 9/11 ended here when the passengers won the first victory in the war on terror. Mark Strassman has their story.
This is the moment after United Flight 93 exploded in the field. Of all the jets hijacked that day, we know the most about Flight 93 because the FBI found both its flight data recorder and its cockpit voice recorder intact, as deep as 25 feet underground. It was the only usable cockpit recording recovered from 9/11. The details of what happened are contained in the official report of the 9/11 Commission. About 30 minutes after Flight 93's late departure, United Airlines sent a text to the pilots, warning them of the other hijackings. Apparently in disbelief, the pilots asked for confirmation. Moments later, the cockpit voice recorder picked up sounds of a struggle. "Mayday, mayday, mayday," one of the pilots radioed air traffic controllers. Someone yelled, "Get out of here." A woman, likely one of the flight attendants, is heard to say, "I don't want to die." The hijackers stabbed the crew with box cutters. Flight 93 turned for Washington, D.C. The terrorist pilot, Ziad Jarrah, tried to speak to the passengers on the intercom, but instead he hit the wrong switch and broadcast this message over the radio.
"Hi, this is the captain. I would like to remain seated. We are all aboard and are going to back to
But some of them, including Tom Burnett, already knew what was really happening.
He told me what was going on.
Dina Burnett talked to her husband three times. She told him about the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and he told her this.
He said, "Don't worry, we're going to do something." And he hung up.
The voice recorder picked up the sound of the passengers outside the cockpit door. One yelled, "In the cockpit, if we don't, we'll die." Then there's the sound of a flight attendant service cart being rammed into the door again and again. The flight data recorder shows Jara, the pilot, rocked the 757 wildly side to side in an apparent effort to knock the passengers off their feet.
What they did in 30 minutes is amazing.
Ken Nacky's brother Lou was among the passengers.
They were able to gain information, formulate a plan, voted on a plan, and acted that plan, put it in motion, and prevented a greater tragedy all in 30 minutes. How amazing is that?
As the passengers charge the cockpit, one of the hijackers is heard to ask in Arabic, "Is that it? I mean, shall we put it down?" The other replies, "Yes, put it in it and pull it down." Flight 93 rolled onto its back and crashed into the countryside at 580 miles an hour. It was 20 minutes from Washington, D.C. Mark Strassman, CBS News, Atlanta.
And there you are.
Wow. As we often said, the heroes, people knew what the alternative, let's go out fighting. What was one of the guys said, let's roll. They put a plan together, let's do this, we've got no choice, let's do it. What can you say for the heroism, knowing that unfortunately they might not make it, but it's worth trying, it's worth dying for, trying to stop the plane from crash landing or to crash into any other building. Everybody on board that plane, in my eyes, every single man and woman, whoever was involved, will always be a hero. The world will always know that the heroism, and it comes in all shapes, all sizes, doesn't it, Dave? But when it comes to people to put their lives on the line and to pull together, it shows you everything. It's very, very moving to see that. And we saw the film. We see a film of it, didn't we, Dave? There's been documentaries, films, and it's just... it's something that we'll never forget, is it? So, once again, to everyone who lost their lives that day, everyone, whatever circumstances, it was all heroes on that day. Sadly, it's just that we'll always remember. This is it. We can never forget, can we? But Leslie, Yann, I mean, you've been listening. To those audios, I mean, it really brings it home sharp and in contrast to 18 years ago, almost 18 years, Dave, isn't it? 18 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sorry, Leslie.
I recently actually watched a movie, a recreation of that flight, what they pieced together from the telephone calls and things like that that people were making to their loved ones. I watched the movie and wow, it was absolutely riveting, and it just stays with you forever. That think of the the bravery it took for those people to call their loved ones to say goodbye, knowing they were going to die, and then trying their damnedest to thwart the plan of the jihadists. It was astonishing, really.
Yeah, and they did.
It certainly was. That's what I thought. I mean, and the thing about it is when you watch these documentaries, these films, put together. You remember, I think this was the one I think he was talking about was like trying to reconnect how it all went. Am I right, Les? I can't remember right. I remember hearing about this a little while ago. There's been a couple of documentaries, and there's been a film that was made of it, wasn't it? Let's Roll, St. Love, was it called, Dave? Or something like that it was called. It was Flight 93. But we'll never forget that. Let's Roll. How can you ever forget what that guy said? Come on, guys, let's do this. Let's Roll. It's the sort of thing you do, isn't it, Dave? Let's do this.
Don't forget that, Jeff. You know, won't forget. And this is something that sticks with me. Every time there's a terror attack, you know, it's something that I've determined that I'm going to do if it ever comes. And it's something I advise people to do as well. Is don't let these people take you hostage or something like that. You know, if you're going to go down, you know that they're going to torture and kill people and whatnot. You know, if you're going to have to go down fighting, go down like they did on Flight 93. If they get a victory, make damn sure that they can celebrate less if you can't take a few of them with you. Now, guys, we've got time for one more. And this one, Jeff, you asked.
Can I just repeat something what Bigfoot's just said? I hope you don't mind, Dave. He said, Bigfoot says it was a building near the tower's coal. I think he's talking to Collerton. I think it was struck by landing gear after the plane hit one of the towers. I think that's what he said. And he's put his blog spot, bigfootsplace.blogspot.com, the stroke 2012, stroke 9, flight 93 memorial. Thank you very much for putting that out there, brother. Thank you. But Dave, I just want to just relay that. Dave, back to you, bruv.
Now, we do have just enough time for this last one, and it's possibly the most important one. What you guys were talking about earlier, you, Jeff, and Leslie, was Gander Airport. Now, Leslie, if I'm right, Gander is in Nova Scotia. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay.
There's a picture of Gander Airport in the slides there, and I think it is a picture of all the planes parked there that landed. And you know, it is a tremendous story, and I love to tell this story every year. This was when Canada was run by sane people. You know, it's not Trudeau's Muslim paradise. And it really connected the people of the United States of America and Canada. And, guys, this one's about 4.5 minutes long. Listen to this it's amazing. Just check it out. Here we go.
One of the brightest lights after the darkness of 9/11 came from a remote town in eastern Canada, and that light is still shining.
CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg is here with an inspiring story of people at their best. And this is really an inspiring story that just keeps on going.
It keeps getting better and better. And you remember when U.S. airspace was closed on the morning of 9/11, nearly 7,000 passengers and crew members bound for places like Miami, Dallas, and New York suddenly found themselves landing in the tiny town of Gander in Newfoundland. But instead of feeling trapped, they were about to be embraced.
Just minutes after the terror attacks of September 11, 2001, hundreds of passenger jets racing towards the United States were ordered to land.
Yeah, that's the first melody.
Hannah and Dennis O'Rourke were on Aer Lingus Flight 105 from Dublin to New York when they were diverted to Gander Airport on the easternmost edge of Canada.
Welcome to Gander International. On a typical day, it looks like this. 7 planes in, 7 planes out. But all that changed one Tuesday morning 10 years ago.
In a span of just 90 minutes, this little airport was transformed into a major international hub. 38 jumbo jets carrying 6,700 passengers and crew found themselves on Gander's doorstep with nowhere to go and nowhere to stay.
How many hotel rooms do you have in Gander?
500.
So, and that's sufficient for most of our needs on a day-to-day basis.
So basically, you had a problem with about another 5,700 rooms you needed to find.
Yeah, but we knew we'd have no problem with that. We knew our people would come through.
And come through, they did. In a matter of hours, the town of 9,000 had mobilized a volunteer army to assist the Plain People, as they were now being called, bringing food, medicine, and clothing to makeshift shelters in local schools and Legion halls. Striking bus drivers returned to work to provide transportation, and the people of Gander opened their homes to thousands of strangers. Beulah Cooper was one of those who offered help.
Well, we went into action, and it was unbelievable how the people opened their hearts and their doors.
For the passengers, who had spent most of that first night on board an airplane, it was only when they disembarked that the magnitude of the day's events finally set in. They were all together in what seemed to be the middle of nowhere.
I think we were just happy to be on the ground at that point, given what we had heard.
I was more concerned about the people, the victims, and I felt quite lucky.
For Hannah and Dennis O'Rourke, the feelings of desperation shared by all Americans hit even closer to home. Their 44-year-old son, Kevin, a New York City fireman, had been one of the first responders at Tower 1 of the World Trade Center.
It was horrible to see on TV what was happening. And I looked at that, and I didn't want to alarm her, but I knew nobody was coming out of that.
For the days the O'Rourkes were in Gander, Beulah helped them cope.
Beulah would take us out, you know, to her, take a shower, and sit out, have a glass of wine with her, and that. And she kept us going. She kept us going, you know.
In the years following their ordeal, the Plain People have found ways to thank the people of Gander, setting up scholarships for local schools, and even arranging for a piece of the World Trade Center to be brought to Gander as part of the town's memorial.
When they left with a new sense of hope, they left with a new sense of pride, and they went away saying that there's still good people left in our world.
2 weeks later, the O'Rourkes' worst fears were confirmed. Their son, Kevin, was one of the nearly 3,000 people killed in New York on 9/11. But 10 years after his untimely death, they credit the generosity of Gander for helping them get through one of their darkest moments.
We're bonded for the rest of our lives, you know. And God bless the people of Gander. They're fantastic. Unbelievable.
And today, the city of Gander will be honored at an award ceremony in Washington for its role on 9/11. And through the weekend, Gander is actually holding a reunion for all those passengers who were stranded in that city. And the cool thing about this is that this time, the folks who are returning are not returning because they have to. They're coming back because they want to.
And you can see why, that incredible connection they all established.
Yeah.
Great story.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You got it.
And there you go, guys.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
As Leslie informed us, it was Newfoundland. That's what she says.
Oh,
Newfoundland.
Okay.
Nova Scotia. Okay, Dave.
Thank you, Leslie.
Dave, we have got a caller. I know we're pushing a little bit on time, but maybe we'll just bring this caller in for a few minutes or so. So here we go. Let's bring him on. Okay, caller 1111. You're live on the EDL radio show. Go ahead.
Yes, my friends. Indeed. You know, first of all, once 9/11 happened, we went after wrong countries. We should bomb already Saudi Arabia because Bin Laden was Saudi Arabia citizen, and we shouldn't even let any flight go.
I think we will use today for the memorial. Okay, we'll use that. I mean, we can talk other days about what we should do, this, that, and the other. But that'll be for another day. I hope you don't mind. It's just that we just want to keep this for memory.
We made a big mistake because Saudi Arabia was one of the people, the countries that they did, and now we are very buddy with them, and that's not absolutely right. That's not absolutely at all. And I'm sure you are aware right now.
I think you make a very good point there. I think it's Mike, isn't it? I think you've called into Kel before.
No argument for me, Mike.
Good to have you, Mike.
Thank you.
But yeah, I would agree. We know where 17, 19 of those came from, and that was from Saudi Arabia. We know that. We can discuss that on another day, but today we'll just keep it for the people that.
But you put on your show Islam and etc. because Islam has almost 400 divisions within themselves. They have Hanafi, Shia, Sunni, Qadianis, Ahmadiyya, and all of them had a war with each other to control the, you know, they want control. So we can
in the Twin Towers. We had Muslims as well, as Jews, as Christians, as Hindus, as Sikhs. We had everybody. You know, it was a great United Nations that day that was there gathered together. I mean, it didn't matter what religious persuasion you came from. Everybody was affected. I think you would agree, Mike. Everybody was affected by it.
Yeah, even Muslims died in it. Yeah, Muslim, Jewish, lots of other nationalities, like more than close to over 100 nationalities died in it. Because, you know, everybody works over there from different countries. I mean, U.S. citizens, but background from somewhere else. But the question is, you know, still... You know, we see London, we have a lot of knife attack happens on daily basis. I mean, two Americans just knife attack in Stockholm airport by the...
we know the way things are going and political correctness, it's going from worse to worse. We understand that. We do realise that there's got to be something done in the not too distant future. You know, it's got to be done. We need to really sort these problems out. We need to get, you know, back to some sort of normality because it's just deteriorating. But Mike, I hope you can call in.
Yeah, call in.
Excuse me, I sneezed. I didn't expect that was coming. Mike, maybe you can call in and. On one of our other shows, I'd like to really touch base with you on a few things. I think you made
some
really good valid points.
And also, and of course, we are all in the same shoes. We are saddened about what happened
on
September 9th.
I've often heard you on Kel's show,
and we never forget them.
No, we won't.
And we never forget the lives of the people lost, and you know, we are with all the people of the United States, indeed.
Yeah, exactly.
Amen to that. Thank you, Mike. As I say, we are coming to the end of the show. We've got a few minutes. Mike, hope you don't mind. Thank you very much for that call. It was a really great call. What we're going to do, what we got? We've got about 10 minutes. Leslie-Ann, I'm going to ask you first of all your final thoughts for this evening and where the listeners can find you during the week. So we know you're a busy lady.
Well, my final thoughts are it's so poignant remembering this day. Really it is. It's just so, it hits me so hard. Just to see all the manifestations of what's happened afterwards. But so I want to thank you guys for putting in such an effort for this and Dave for the bits that you had to play. Yeah. And So I'm on, although it's a little bit more limited now because I'm juggling two jobs right now, I am on all social media, Twitter, Facebook, Gab, Minds, and my webpage, my personal webpage is therealclaireisrael.org.
Brilliant.
That's where I am, yeah.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on this day. We know we're too, you know, we're doing the Memorial Day today, but we do know in the next couple of days that a lot of other radio shows will be doing it. But I thought we'd do it today. But once again, thank you for all the work that you do and for being here with us as well. And have a great week. And don't work too hard. Yeah, lady, you don't work too hard. Thank you so much. With that, I'm going to pass it to Dave. Dave, once again, brilliant slides this evening, great script as usual, and Dildo's clips that you used today was superb, brother. So once again, I salute you, Dave. Thank you very much. With that, I'd like to pass it to you to find out where the great listeners can find you during the week and your final thoughts for this evening.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Leslie. Always a pleasure to work with both of you. You know, and Leslie, to get your final thoughts. A final thought of mine, I suppose, is that yes, there are good people in the world, as they said in this coverage of Gander, and the good people in the world can defeat the evil people of the world, and we just have to understand that. It's going to take us standing up and stepping up and not giving them the victories. And we just have to keep on keeping on and doing what we do. And you guys can find me at the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com. My show is Unpleasant Blind Guy. It's on High Plains, Pundit Talk Radio, and SHR Media and the Western Free Radio Network. My show times are 1 p.m. Monday through Friday, U.S. Eastern, and that's 6 p.m. British Summertime. And I have new shows out on Saturday at midnight, U.S. Eastern, and that's 5 a.m. in the U.K., British Summertime. Right now I've got one discussing my show, The Way Back, and it is with a friend of the show, the Underground Professor. I'm going to be speaking with him for a few weeks. Please tune in for the first part of that. And I will be with everybody. I'm going to have a small hiccup in my internet service, but I will be back with everybody full time, full bore, and full frontal on
full
Tuesday,
throttle.
Probably. Full throttle, yeah, all of that, full metal jacket, and, looking forward to it, as always. And I just want to say to the foot soldiers and angels and patriots of the English Defense League and to patriots around the world, be blessed and no surrender. And back to you, Jeff.
No surrender ever. I'd like to thank everybody again, everybody in the chat room. Thank you, Mike, for calling in. I'm going to play us out now with something that I used to play at the beginning when I first started, and I think you'll all like this. This is The Winds of Change. Let's play this. Makes a change, actually. So here we go, and we'll see you again this Thursday. Thank you, everybody, and no surrender. No surrender ever.
Listening to the wind of change. could be so close, like brothers. The future's in the air, can feel it everywhere. I'm blowing with the wind of change.
Good night, everybody, and safe week, and be vigilant.
Cheers, guys.